Welcome to 2500 Del Monte Street, the oral history of Tower Records. Today's guest, Renee Tyler. Welcome back. I'm your host, Bob Zimmerman. Renee Tyler is on the podcast today. We've been trying to get her on here for a while, and we're glad to finally have her. She spent 21 years with Tower Records. She started with the company when she was 19. She didn't know what Tower Records was. She was simply looking for a job. Like many before her, she started in accounts payable. She then worked in the advertising billing department. She took some time off to care for her mother. She came back to accounts payable, and then the call to the big time came. Renee was tapped on the shoulder and asked to be George Scarlett's administrative assistant. For 12 years, Renee worked with George in record division, typing those Scarlett memos, coming up with synonyms for the phrase record label weasel, shopping for George's Crocs. It wasn't an easy job, and Renee tells us all about it on today's episode. Enjoy. Renee Tyler, welcome to 2500 Del Monte Street.
Hi, Bob.
How you doing?
I'm doing very well. It's so good to see your face.
Nice to see you. A little aside for the people who listen and don't know the behind the scenes thing. We've been trying to get Renee on here for quite a while, and part of it was me missing some emails, and part of it was talking Renee into doing this. But we finally have her here. Very yes. Excited to have her, and we're going to hear her story. So Renee, thank you for doing this.
I am so honored to be part of your 100, hopefully plus 100, but yeah, it's truly an honor.
Oh, well, awesome. We're glad you're here. So Renee, you told me just before we hit record, you are originally from Wisconsin.
I am. I am from Wisconsin.
What part? Where?
Well, I was born in Salinas, California. And then my family and I moved to Wisconsin in 1972. And I was only 7, so I don't have a lot of memories of.
They didn't like sunshine.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's a family thing. So, yeah, we moved in 1972, packed up the car, moved to Wisconsin, and I was in second grade. So, yeah, and then I moved back when I was 18 to California, and I've been here ever since.
Okay. So yeah. what part of Wisconsin?
So it's kind of southern. It's it's about an hour from Madison.
Okay. So at that really young age, did you feel a cultural shift? Were you just like, oh my God, this is not what I'm used to? Or was it?
I didn't. I really didn't.
Yeah? Okay.
I was so young, you know, at age 7, you don't really fucking know what. I know. I didn't. No, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And, you know, snow for the first time. Yeah. I'm assuming it was snow for the first time. But I guess I really didn't.
Yeah. And so so you're in Wisconsin in your formative years. What was the family dynamic like as far as being into music, art, movies, you know, et cetera?
So a lot of music. Even when I was growing up in Salinas, my parents would have parties and spin records. So a lot of musical influence of my parents. And of course, at the time, I'm just like, ugh, gross. That's, you know, and that was like Elvis and then Merle Haggard, Tom Jones, Mac Davis, Neil Diamond.
You're hitting all the late 60s, early 70s touchstones.
For sure. Yeah. And my parents would always, and because what I assume, because they went to all these parties with their records, they would write their name, their last name on all the records. So the records that I got from my parents have Tyler written on them, which just depreciates the shit out of every damn thing. But so those were the kind of things that I grew up in Salinas. But then when we moved to Wisconsin, my dad owned a bar. So he had a jukebox and we had just every 45 that you can imagine that he would bring home after they would. And I don't know how often that happened, but I remember my sisters, and I just got this confirmed this week. It was so sad that my sister, both of them had their own record players, but I didn't have my record player. And so I remember playing records in my sister's room, just anything that I could get a hold of.
Yeah.
Spending that.
Early on in terms of just you, so your dad's bringing home, you know, they've got their records and then they're bringing home records that had been on the jukebox for a couple months. But so what kind of things were you spinning? What did you like?
So I do remember the most thing that I remember is Paul McCartney and Wings. I remember that Apple label in the middle and that mm-hmm. just spinning around. I loved it. So yeah.
Do you remember what song or?
Band on the Run.
Okay. Yep.
That I do remember. I can still remember to this day, the Green Apple running around.
Yeah.
That's really all I remember. That's my earliest memory, I believe, because it was in my oldest sister's room. And, but the, just anything that we can get a hold of, really.
Yeah. How much older were your sisters than you?
My middle sister was 2 years and mm-hmm. my oldest sister 5 years.
So were you like kind of listening to the things that they were listening to? Like, were they kind of
handing down
stuff?
I was listening to things that they were listening to. I also remember, and my earliest memories too, were I had really older cousins that were like 10, 15 years older, at least 15 years older than me, that lived in San Jose when we lived in Salinas. Mm-hmm. And that's where I got into Carole King, Tapestry.
Okay.
Still in my heart.
Oh yeah.
And then my cousin Mike would listen to and loudly. He had this stereo system that just blew the whole doors off of the entire house. But he would listen to like Frank Zappa and weird shit from Woodstock, like a Woodstock live track.
Like Country Joe and the Fish and
kinds of stuff like that. Yeah. And me and my sisters remember that number nine, it's still a joke to this day. The number nine to uh-huh. us is just yeah. comical.
Oh yeah.
So that kind of stuff stuck with me. But again, parents would be spinning records at home as well. And so, yeah, most of my musical influences did come from my sisters and older cousins.
Yeah. Was there like a local radio station that you listened to at all, or stuff you were listening to with your, like,
in Little Reedsburg, Wisconsin? No, there was a radio station, WRDB, that my mom would listen to every morning. It was more of a, I remember it being more of a talk radio, but they would still spin some records. None that I really remember. But still, it was mostly came from my sisters and going to their,
yeah,
making my parents go, making my my parents would say, you know, you got to take your little sister to whatever you go to. So a lot of influences there.
Yeah. How about, do you remember, I mean, obviously you're getting, dad's bringing home, you know, current 45s and stuff, but do you remember the first record or single you may have actually bought in a store?
So living in little town, Reedsburg, Wisconsin, I do remember it was the local appliance store, Fearing's Appliance. And we would go through those records. I don't remember buying anything. I also remember going to the library, because the library You could rent out. And I remember specifically, I would rent out all the time. It was a Three Dog Night full-length record. Mm-hmm. But really, that I don't remember. There wasn't a whole lot we needed to buy.
Right.
Because my dad bringing home all that stuff. And the only
dad was like the original Napster. It's the original file sharing.
Yes, exactly. He was.
Yeah,
he'd be proud of that. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. How about favorite albums of all time and favorite artists of all time? Give me three, four, five of those. Oh, my Lord. Dude. I know it changes. I get it. Everyone listening goes, hey, man, that changes all the time. I get it.
I know. It changed all the time, and a very hard question to answer. And I tested one of my workmates today, and I'm like, hey, if you were to be asked just to give one, and he gave me one, just the one. I'm like, that's it? That's all you got? And I had this entire list. I'm like, all right, well, you weren't in the music industry, so maybe that's. But
right.
Like I said, I mentioned before, Carole King, that was always a favorite. And then Elvis. But that came after many years of not liking them when my parents did. The Cars, mm-hmm. I grew up loving The Cars. The two first records were phenomenal.
Yes.
And then a lot of Eddie Money, Playing for Keeps, that was early. Recently I've come to appreciate Al Green, Let's Stay Together. That full length record is just phenomenal, and I play it all the time.
So we're going to Memphis on vacation this summer.
Yeah.
We're going to his church in the hope that he does a Sunday service, but they don't tell you if he's going to be there or not. Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah. He's singing all gospel music, but.
Oh, wow.
I got to see him once, and he's amazing. Just
Holy
amazing.
Crap.
Yeah.
How old is he? He's got to be.
Oh God. He's got to be pushing 80, maybe, 75, 80.
Jesus. Good for him.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's phenomenal. Replacements, Pleased to Meet Me is
nice.
Just always on my playlist. Yaz, Upstairs at Eric's.
Mm-hmm.
Those were kind of my earlier stuff. And then I got into, when I came out to California, I got into some just like Queensryche. Queensryche, Operation Mindcrime, that was like my first concept record.
Right, right.
I think it was Bob Aiken that got me into that.
Really?
I lived with Bob Tower Aiken and his girlfriend for a while as a roommate. And just seeing him geek out on music, oh my God, we had so much fun. And then Massive Attack. Mezzanine and Protection. George Scarlett is what I think he probably turned. It was either him or Louise Solomon that turned me onto that. James Lade is one of my all-time favorites. I can listen to that from beginning to end. Annie Lennox's first solo record, I think it was Diva.
Okay.
That just warms my heart.
You just made Tim Devin happy.
Oh, really? Oh, yeah, I love Tim Devin.
Good.
Queens of Stone Age. Queens
which,
and
which
Stone
Queens
Age.
Of the Stone Age?
Like Clockwork is my absolute favorite.
Okay.
That one I can just, it takes me somewhere, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
It's one of those records that you can start from beginning to finish and it just literally will take me somewhere that I usually need to be. Red Hot Chili Peppers was the Blood Sugar Sex Magik was phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
Nickel Creek, their first record that I heard, I know it wasn't their first record and I don't remember the name of it, but I saw them at Tower because I'd never heard of them.
Right.
And I saw them in a conference room at Tower Ivory.
Wow.
God damn it. That just, and I had no, I'm like, all right, I'll take a break and I'll listen to whoever's playing. And I'm like, oh my Lord.
Yeah.
That violin with the vocals. Ah, I just fell in love with that.
Did you fall in love with Chris Thiele?
I didn't.
Oh really? Okay.
No, I didn't.
Jude Law with a mandolin.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Morphine, Cure for Pain and Good. I was a huge, a little bit of a groupie, with Morphine. Mm-hmm. Foo Fighters' first record is, just love, which took me a while to love. And I don't know why, but Jody Beth Barrett said, you know what, you got to give this record a listen, a try, and a fair listen. And I learned to love it and still love it.
I mean, the whole album's great, but that song Exhausted kills me every time.
Oh, so good, right?
Yeah.
Little bit of Nine Inch Nails, a Fragile in my life is always acceptable. And Urge Overkill, Saturated, does it for me too.
Yep.
Hundreds of others, but those are the ones that really mean something to me.
Well, Renee, we've run out of time. We appreciate you being on here today. You're literally the first person, literally the first person I haven't had to pull it out of. That's awesome.
Yeah. Okay. Good. And I got to do all of it.
Wow.
I'm so proud of myself. But there are a lot more, of course. Yeah,
no, absolutely.
Know.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But you hopscotched real nice. So you covered lots of bases with that list. That's awesome.
Good.
How about we got to ask concerts? Do you remember your very first concert?
Oh boy. So I had to really reach back on this one. I think it was Head East, a band called Head East. I can't
even
tell you.
Were they kind of like a hard rock band?
Yeah. Okay. Back in the 70s.
Yeah.
But it was at a fair, like a county fair, but it got rained out. So I don't think we got to see them. I think we got to see the band that played. Yeah, but I don't remember who it was. So I guess that doesn't really count. But
it was Black Sabbath.
Yeah, right. I did get to see Tommy James and the Shondells at high school.
Nice.
And that was at another fair. It was at Butterfest.
I'd go see him in a heartbeat. That guy turned out so many hits.
It was a great show.
Yeah.
I don't know why they were playing it. Butter Festival in Reedsburg, Wisconsin at a high school.
They were offered
whatever.
The gig probably.
Right. We'll take it.
Have you ever got a chance to read his autobiography?
Oh, that, I would love that.
Fascinating. He was in tight with the mob and the guy who owned Strawberries up in Boston.
Making a note of that.
Oh, it's a really sure. good, I'd it's a really good that. Read. I think somebody said they were making a movie out of it too, which it sounds like it could be fascinating. So
why wouldn't you?
So you've seen in your time, both with Tower and since, you've seen a million concerts. Let's hear some of your favorites.
Oh my God. Here's the thing, Bob, I would always have to get so fucked up before a show and during it that I would barely remember. I do remember going to...
You weren't going on stage. You were just watching the show.
Exactly. Right? Mountain Air. And it was like Journey and a bunch of other
things. Someone else has mentioned that thing. Yeah.
I know. I think I heard Wendy Powell mention Mountain Air.
Yeah.
And
so that was a festival in Sacramento?
No, it was somewhere in California.
San Francisco?
Yeah, it was somewhere close.
Yeah.
No, yeah. I don't think it was San Francisco. I mean, it was called Mountain Air, so it had to have been somewhere in the mountains. But yeah, I think that was like my first like real like festival that I went to. Couldn't tell you beans about it, but I'm sure I had
a great
time.
Tell us about the concerts you remember.
All right. So concerts that I remember, there were several, of course, that Tower brought to me, but I do remember getting tickets to see Afghan Whigs.
Oh, here we go.
And that was at this small, tiny place here in Sacramento. I don't remember the venue. But I remember after the show, and it was a great show. Of course, it was a great show. After the show, there was no green room.
Right.
Where they
it was like
went.
An alleyway or something. Yeah.
Yeah. It was exactly an alleyway.
Yeah.
So the band came out and we kind of followed them. I remember Greg Dooley, he was just taking a piss in said alley. And I'm like, hey, can I get your autograph? Because I saw him kind of moving around the alley. I'm like, here we go. This is where I'm going to ask him for his autograph. I'm like, hey, can I get an autograph? He's like, a little busy right now. I'm like, oh, no. You're good. But when you're done,
right.
Yeah. And he did.
Nice.
There's so many, but, I do remember some, I remember seeing Nine Inch Nails in Sacramento and I had the suite, like the Tower suite.
Okay.
Brought my, at the time, boyfriend's friends. And, it was just a shit show. They were, you know,
the suite or the show
bathroom in the suite.
Uh-huh.
So, although Nine Inch Nails was perfectly good, it was just the friends that kind of brought everything down. But yeah. I don't have a lot of memories of bands. Yeah. Foo Fighters, of course, the first time that I saw them in Sacramento, that was just another religious experience. Just an amazing show. And as I was telling a friend of mine at work, the show, I said, yeah, and then they did this. And he's like, well, he's like, did they do this? And then they did that. And they did that. I'm like, yeah, that they did that. He's like, yeah, they do that at every show. I'm like, whatever. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. Exactly. So you move from Wisconsin to California. Did you move to Sacramento?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah.
At 18? Sacramento. At 18, I was just a few months shy of 19.
Uh-huh.
And I worked a few jobs. And then my friend Tabitha, who worked in accounts payable at Tower, she said, hey, they're hiring. I'm like, okay, cool. I'm like, what is it? I had no idea what Tower was.
So you hadn't been to any of the stores yet?
None. I had no clue what Tower was.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what is it? She's like, it's a corporate office for a record retailer. And that didn't really even compute with me. I didn't know what a corporate office was. I didn't know what a record retailer was. And she's like, but they're hiring. I'm sure you'll get the job. And I'm like, okay, cool. What do I do? And I don't remember submitting a application, a resume or anything. She's like, just come in at whatever, 1 o'clock on Tuesday and they'll talk to you. I'm like, okay, cool.
Do you remember who interviewed you?
I do. It was Sharon Simon, Chris Morrison, who I nicknamed Warden Morrison. She was head of accounts payable. But for whatever reason, she couldn't meet with me that day. So Sharon met with me. It was her assistant. And we walk into the conference room. She's like, honestly, I don't know why I'm meeting with you. I just she's like, I really don't know what to ask you. I don't know what to do. And I'm like, all right, that's cool. And so we just kind of started talking about non-work related stuff. And
right.
She was super cool. She's like, okay, well, we'll let you know. We'll let you know. I'm like, okay. And then I think it was like the next day. They're like, hey, can you start?
Nice.
You're hired. Can you start? I'm like, yeah, sure. And then I was thinking, yeah, this is just temporary until I find something, you know, a little bit more permanent. But then when I got in there, I'm like, all right, I know what this is. This is
cool. Tell me about that. So what in accounts payable, like who did, you know, what section, what were you paying and stuff? Did you have labels or?
Yeah. So it was all the indie labels or distributors and all the major labels. You couldn't really do the majors until you started with the indie stuff. And then, I mean, a few years later, I was reconciling, you know, multi-million dollar statements
right.
for the majors. And I was kind of good at it, you know, and I got it. I got it. And it was good. I liked it. But then Donna Nolan in advertising, she said, hey, we need somebody over in the billing department. You know, you should apply for it. And I'm like, all right. She's like, wink, wink. You should apply for it. I'm like, oh, yeah, cool.
Yeah.
And so she hired me and oh my God, that was, I'm like, oh my God, I'm in the advertising department of Tower Records. This is wonderful. And that's where
I'm sorry to back up a second. So you start off in accounts payable. At what point do you walk into a tower store? You're working for this company. You're like, at some point you're like, oh, I need to check this out.
I'm sure it was Watt Avenue because I lived over there. Really what took me back was, the bookstore. I love the bookstores. I'm really not a book person, but I remember just going, I love bookstores. This is great. But yeah. Went to Broadway and, that small little tiny store, but just the energy in it and the employees were just phenomenal. They were just great. All their knowledge and, you know, oh, if you like this, we'll turn you on to this. It's like, oh my God, this is great.
So now you're realizing who you're working for.
And
being in Sacramento, even though they were hiring people basically off the street, you're working for a company that's respected in the city and stuff.
Yeah.
Did you make friends with anybody? Go ahead.
It was so because the corporate office was so unassuming. It was just that, you know, one story building in West Sacramento, the armpit of Sacramento. It was just like, you really didn't know what you were walking into until you got in there and just saw the weird fucking artwork that was just phenomenal stuff.
Right. Right.
Yeah. It was truly special.
And when you started over in accounts, but like, did you immediately, like, were there people that you bonded with right away or did that not come till you were over in advertising?
No, because you know, when you're young like that, when you're 19, you know, you bond with everybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
There was a lot of buzz in literally a lot of buzz. like back in the warehouse, I remember the first time somebody took me back in the warehouse. I'm not going to name names, but you know, you go back in the warehouse and
Tony Valeria. It's okay. Everybody's mentioned him. Yeah.
So Tony took me back to the warehouse. And, you know, somebody's pulling out a drawer from their desk filled with Coke. And they're like, God. There you go. I'm like, shit. I'm like, yeah, I'm not really a Coke person, but yeah, it's cool. Right on.
Yeah.
Oh, just awesome. The whole experience was truly phenomenal.
So you move into advertising in 88, working in billing. What was that like? What were you doing there?
So, I think my region was, had to have been LA. So the LA region, and I didn't work there that long. I wasn't in there that long, but, you know, working with, you know, Bob Aiken and Terry Ball, Steve Nichol, God, just some really cool people. And you know, trying to see what their job is about. But the billing department was just making sure that the media that you're advertising in, you know, they'll send you their whatever their ad was in the papers, and you had to bill them for that kind of stuff. But meeting people, like I remember meeting Nikki Sixx, not Nikki Sixx, it was his ex-girlfriend. Oh, she's like, and I think she worked for the LA Times. She's like, yeah, I used to date Nikki Sixx. I'm just like, oh my God, what? That's phenomenal. And it's just a super sweet girl. And I remember her coming up from LA, and we went to a show together, and she gave me a bunch of, and she would refer to him as Frank, because it was Frank Ferrano, I think his real name was. And she gave me just a bunch of shit, just like a lock of his hair, maybe a little creepy, but a lock of his hair, but it's like a copy of his library card and lyrics from music that he had written, which just, I mean, I was a huge Motley Crue fan. And she ended up being just super boring at the show that we went to.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm ditching you, dude. Because she didn't want to drink. She didn't want to smoke weed. She didn't want to do nothing. I'm like, all right.
She saved that for her time with Nikki.
She had to have, because she was super boring. But yeah, advertising just catapulted me into this is something super special. Where I work is people just couldn't believe it.
Yeah. So you left for a while to go back to Wisconsin.
I did. So when I was in advertising, I had to go back to Wisconsin because my mother had cancer. So I took care of her for a couple of months, and then when she passed away, I went back to Tower and went back to the trusted old accounts payable again. Sadly, my position, they had to fill it. So I went back to accounts payable. I was there for a little bit longer, and then I went and worked for Suenoi. She was the manager of the data entry department. And that was, from what I remember and recall, because I wasn't there that long either, it was creating invoices for the international product. So any international product, it was maybe like pre-Bayside.
Gotcha. Okay.
So invoicing all the product that would be shipped to and from the international stores, which I learned a bunch, but that's when I kind of got tapped on the shoulder, and George Scarlett needed a administrative assistant. I'm like,
so I got it. So you got tapped on the shoulder. So has George ever told you how he came about asking you to be his administrative assistant?
He did, because I just asked that. I asked.
Was it
him
because of being taken into the warehouse? Did that have anything?
No. He said that somebody had suggested me for the position because I looked so intense when I worked. I don't know what that really means, but I guess that's a good qualification.
I guess it means you weren't goofing off, which is good.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That maybe I had the wherewithal to be a good administrator.
It's the George Costanza thing where if you always look pissed off, people think you're busy and working.
Yes, exactly. I think that's really.
Did you actually have to interview with George? Or was it just, hey, you're coming over here now?
That's a really good question. I don't think I did. If I did, I don't remember.
Okay.
I'm going to have to ask George that, because I had to have, right? That would be ridiculous to, I don't know. not a lot of questioning.
I mean, I don't. Because if you interviewed with him and you told him, you were a big Motley Crue fan, you might not have gotten the job. So maybe you didn't interview.
I think he knew.
Yeah.
Yeah. He had to have known, because I don't want to say I didn't have a great musical taste. I didn't have a broad musical taste.
Yeah. Hey, you know what? We all walked into Tower with the things we liked.
Right.
And then everything expanded, you know.
It started somewhere.
Exactly.
And being from little town Wisconsin, there wasn't a whole lot. And
yeah.
But my God, when I walked into the record division.
All right. So set the stage. Tell me about it. Tell me about.
So
going in there, because it's fun. I never spent a lot of time. I had to go in there when I was getting ready to go to Canada. And I remember being in the stores and hearing something like, you know, Bob Dylan would say something like, well, I don't know, I'm going to need to talk to Stan about that sometime this week. Or you would hear these things. And then I get there, I'm like, their offices are right next to each other. They could literally go, hey, Stan, what about, you know, so. So anyway, tell me about walking in record division and what that was all like for you.
And I don't remember like being nervous at all. I mean, at that age,
you're 21 now?
I was probably 20, so probably at least 23.
Oh, okay. All right.
Maybe 24. But everybody, all the girls were just great. Sunita, Karen Simmons, who's still just the best lover to today. Wendy Powell, very welcoming, just really, you know, high energy girls. Julie Morris, who was Bob Delanois' assistant at the time. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I don't remember it being, I wasn't nervous.
Excited?
Very excited. I didn't have anything to compare it to. So sure. I was walking into this thing, never been an administrative assistant before. I didn't even know what an administrative assistant was, but of course, working for George Scarlett, you know, the man, the myth, the legend. I mean, at the time he wasn't that, but he was just, you know, a dude.
Well, you helped shape him into that.
Did I? Do you think? I appreciate that.
I mean, the rumor is that you wrote the Scarlet Letters, but I'm not going to forward that. Yeah.
Yeah. No. We can keep that between us. But yeah, it was just a phenomenal experience. I learned so much. I mean, everybody's individual job and what they did, and working for Stan Gelman, that was a whole, you know, I had never worked for somebody so like Stan Gelman. He was very different, his approach of just everything, but just knowing what his job and his responsibility was. And I can't even imagine the decisions that he had to make. And but you know, well respected. I respected him. I respected everybody in that office and what they did. But it was just, you know, fun. Just all the perks that you got, and all the new, you know, looking at all the, you know, because the new releases at that time, they came to you in the mail, and you got to look at all of that stuff. And I had to file.
It was usually
all that
6 weeks
away
before it came out and stuff.
Oh,
and
yeah.
So you walk into George. So what, did you have a desk outside of George's office?
No, he had his office, and then for a while I was right outside of his office. But then they converted an office that held two people, and that's when Louis Solomon came over from London to be the guru that she was. But I got to share an office with her for 7 years, and that was just something that catapulted me into so much music and culture and just beyond belief. It was amazing.
So let's just kind of go back. So you're starting working for George, and you know, without giving too much away or whatever you want to say. So how did George describe to you what your position was, or how did you learn your position. Did you learn it watching at the other girls and how they worked, or were there specific things George kind of wanted from you, or
George was so very laid back. He didn't really, he was more of a, he wasn't really a, like a manager type person. Just, you know, do this, do these things that I need you to do, mm-hmm. kind of a thing. And, you know, I guess maybe I probably watched Wendy, with her dealings with Stanley, but I don't really, it was just all very, laid back. And right. like I said, I didn't know what an administrative assistant was. I don't know how to be one. I just wanted to be the best thing that
needed.
I could.
Yeah.
So, and again, he wasn't really, George wasn't a good manager. He was just, you know, he was told he needed an assistant to help with, some things.
Just organizing and
yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah. And so, you know, I learned a lot, of course, because it was my first experience with it.
One of the things that probably had to be really cool besides working for a guy like George was, and what's, when I think of that office and what was probably very different, even though the folks from the labels went and met with Stan and they met with Bob and they met with these, you know, different people, they're in there talking to George about, you know, specific things regarding product, getting into the stores and stuff like that. So you had a lot of one-on-one FaceTime with a lot of the label people on a national level.
I did. I did. And there were a lot of meetings that we had that I had to take notes at, and I was horrible at notes, just horrible at taking notes. So at some point I said, you know what, I'm going to have to record these sessions because I have to. I can't, I'm horrible at
taking
notes.
You're not writing fast enough or shorthand.
Yeah. Minutes was not a strong suit. So I actually bought a dictaphone, one of those just little tape recorders. And I started to record the meetings that we had. And then I would go back to the office, put a little headset on, play the tape, and then just type it.
Gotcha.
And I still have some of those. I just told George not too long ago that I still have some of those. George was always such an awesome wordsmith. The words that would come out of his mouth on a daily basis, words that I didn't know what the fuck meant. I would literally write them down and look them up. I was always just so impressed. And George always said, I'm not very smart, but I know some good words. I'm like, you really do. Indeed, you do.
What else do you remember about just in that off? I mean, is there anything that you remember, anything that stands out as, you know, whether it's like, I don't know, you know, hearing that we, you know, won Retailer of the Year. I mean, that kind of stuff would happen, you know, away and stuff, but, or even like how things, you know, and I don't mean to get hung up on this because I asked someone about this 2 weeks ago, but, you know, what was that office like on 9/11, you know, or are there days where you specifically remember things where it was like, you know, oh, this is crazy, or, you know?
I do. So George and I were kind of the redheaded stepchildren of the office. Literally. We really were. We actually moved from the main corporate office to the warehouse in the back. We had offices back there. I don't remember what year that was, but it was probably 97, 98. We moved back there. We had a great setup. And then that's when we brought in Kevin Winnick for the sidelines stuff. And but we kind of had our own little world there. And Joe Lepe, he did our all of our Latin stuff. He was right. in there, and Jared Gunn, and yeah, we had a great vibe back there because we were just kind of our own department. I do remember when 9/11 happened. George was supposed to be, it was on a Tuesday, and George was supposed to fly out on a Wednesday. I remember that morning watching TV, and I think I saw the second one, the second plane hit, and I just kept thinking, there's no way. Is George going to travel tomorrow?
Right, right.
He probably will. He probably will travel tomorrow. And then you get to the office and it was just somber. Just, you know, we were just all in shock. Yeah. And I think we either had a radio or maybe a TV. But I do remember, I'm like, I gotta listen to Marilyn Manson, Antichrist Superstar. I gotta get my head straight. I need to get a wrap my head around this, but yeah, it was all just so weird. And you know, it just, everything changed after that. It was just so, such a fucking downer.
Yeah. How about, I mean, anything else in terms of, I mean, I don't like to dwell too much on kind of like the end, but you know, at a certain point, people in record division were let go, or you know, just different things were going on. I mean, how was it then being in there?
So I moved on to in 2003. I went back to the faithful accounts payable, but that was because of my own devices that I was wrapped up in. I think George was given a lot of pressure because I was not, I wasn't being a very good employee. And then I was addicted to drugs and I wasn't showing up to work all the time. So he just kind of gave me an ultimatum. Hey, you, either don't work at Tower Records anymore, or you can go to accounts payable where they need some help. I'm like, all right, I guess I'm going back to accounts payable. I truly didn't want to leave. I couldn't give up my addiction. So I went back to accounts payable for 3 years and ended my career there in 2006.
Yeah.
It was still just, I loved accounts payable. I was good at it. I was reconciled $1 million statements, and I there wasn't any time that I didn't like my job at Tower.
Yeah.
It was still, even the positions that I was put in or I put myself in, I still made the best out of it and it worked out very well.
Yeah. How about, do you have any memories of TAC?
There were a lot of memories of TAC. I have some really good memories of NARM too. I was able to go to some NARMs, but TAC was, God dang it, those were always so much fun. And my most memorable was the stand-up, the cardboard cutout of Mark Ryan. That year that Mark Ryan couldn't make it, I'm like, oh my God, I'm so heartbroken. He can't make it. Uh-huh. Let's make it. And I had to have some form of Mark Ryan there. So I had the cardboard cutout. And I remember asking him, I'm like, hey, can you take a picture of yourself in the store right now? Just whatever you're doing, just have somebody. He's like, why? I'm just like, just do it. Come on, just
right,
do it.
Right.
Sent me the picture and I took it over to the sign shop and they made that cardboard cutout. Things that were done to that cardboard cutout.
There was lipstick in various parts of that. And that wasn't mine. It was
and I think he got drowned. I think somebody drowned him in the pool too. I was so bummed.
Yeah. Yeah.
Every tack was just phenomenal. The artists that we would see,
Well, you were talking about the fact that your folks like Merle Haggard, and then to be at Attack and Merle Haggard's, you know.
Right?
Yeah.
It was incredible. Every one of them I met, I think I met Richie Sambora twice. I don't know why I'm thinking twice, but he would just be hanging out at the bar at the Radisson.
Right.
That's when it was at the Radisson. He would just be hanging out at the bar, and like Richie Sambora sitting by himself at the bar. Yeah. And I took Angie Westrick, who was the accounts payable manager for a while. I'm like, let's just go talk to Richie Sambora at the bar.
Exactly.
Yeah. Do that. And then we got some pictures with him. He was super sweet.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah. That's the kind of shit that would happen at those.
That was places. Yeah. That was always fun. That was just, you know, those guys, they were willing to hang out and talk, and that was all. It was always very loose. So
very, really very loose.
How about interactions with Russ?
So not a lot of interactions with Russ during the Tower years. Again, me and George being the redheaded stepchildren, not a lot, but when I did, he would always bring us girls in record division Christmas gifts that seemed to be very personalized, you know, either jewelry, which I still have, and some other cool special stuff. But it was after the Tower years is when I would see him. Right after Tower, I worked for Wells Fargo, and I saw him on the 21st floor where I worked, and went over and talked to him for a while. I had to tell him my name. He's like, "Oh, hey, you worked for George Scarlett. Yeah, I remember you." I'm like, cool. And then I would see him at, like, you know, Destroy Boys and other shows, just some wild shows that, you know, he would have his own little booth. And
exactly, yeah.
And it was just so great to see him at those shows. And and then I would see him at Karen Simmons and Dal Bassey's, I think it was their 50th birthday party. Saw him there. Got to hang out, and then, you know, he would remember my name. And when he would remember my name, it was just, "Oh my God, you remember that? He's so special."
Yeah.
So, just always super sweet, and God, just salt of the earth, dude. Yeah. He you wouldn't know by looking at him that he just built this empire that touched thousands, millions of people. Just so awesome.
Yeah. And then just to go back, because I realized that I cut you off. You were talking about sharing an office with Louise for 7 years, and
how much you
learned from her. Tell us about that.
God, that.
Again, for those who don't know, Louise Solomon was married to Michael Solomon, who we've had on here, and you know, was a very important figure at Tower. But talk about working alongside Louise.
Man, she was a force. She was, her energy was, I just loved being around her, with her. She turned me on to so much music. We had this huge boom box in our office, and we would, you know, play all kinds of music. She would turn me on to all kinds of things, and her job was, her job was unique in that she would do special advertising, and she did special festivals as well. A festival here in Sacramento, is the Heritage Festival. She orchestrated the Heritage Festival, which brought in a lot of new upcoming artists in the local area and outside. But, oh man, I learned so much from her, and her London, all of her London stuff that she had. And she taught me so much. And I bonded with her so well. Like I feel like I'm from England now. I feel so close to what you're doing. And I did find out that I've got a huge percentage of my heritage is in London from one of those DNA tests.
Oh, okay.
I'm like, I knew we had some kind of a bond, but yeah, she was just absolutely wonderful in every aspect. Her and Michael, we always had such an awesome time, but yeah, she was truly, so instrumental in a lot of my new music.
Yeah.
Affluences. Yeah. She was awesome.
Yeah. Now, and so you worked until the end?
Well, pretty much. I do remember my last paycheck in 2006 was some kind of a voucher or it wasn't like a true paycheck. It didn't have MTS Incorporated on it anymore, but that was like the first of the last paychecks that everybody got. But yeah, that's when I exited. I mean, of course we all knew things were going down, but I think it was January of 2006. I'm like, all right, I need to start looking for something else.
Yeah.
This is coming down really quick.
Yeah. Do you still remember that Friday that the auction went down?
I don't.
Oh, you don't? Yeah. I remember that like it was yesterday. Yeah, that was because they were, you know, everybody was in Delaware in a courtroom in Delaware to figure out who was going to buy the rights to Tower. And yeah, that was a rough one.
Just so heartbreaking. I do still have I remember in the corporate office when they were just, you know, cutting everything, they were cutting expenses and they cut the, when people, I think it was Exotic Plants, the company Exotic Plants were,
oh, okay,
because all the plants that we had in the corporate office were, you know, we didn't own them. And then they would come and water them every week. And they're like, all right, well, this has got to go. And they're like, well, we're going to sell you all those plants for a discount. I'm like, cool. So I bought this huge corn plant for like $20 and I still have it in my kitchen. It's like 9 feet tall right now. So yeah, that's
cool. Anything we didn't touch on that,
I think we covered everything.
Anyone you want to give a shout out to?
I do. I want to, we were talking about all the relationships that we had with reps that came into the corporate office. A lot of them. And of course, George's favorites were my favorites, but, Rob Chapman, of course, who you had on.
Yep.
What a great guest. He loves to talk about himself. Jay Gilbert, love Jay Gilbert.
Yeah.
God, what a great podcast that was. Oh, I love that. Buzzy Swing, who you just had on. And where can you find, what company do you work for that you know two people named Fuzzy?
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was Fuzzy Swing and then Fuzzy, who also worked at, I think he worked at Watt Avenue. I don't remember where he worked, but yeah, two Fuzzies. And then there was like Charlie Clendenin. Oh, just some great people, just some great individuals that I still think of. And every time I hear their names, just absolutely warms my heart. But yeah, it's for the 21 years that I worked for Tower, we'll never get that back.
No,
never. No. But we still have each other. We still have our entire Tower family and a reunion. Please, anybody
you were at Kevin's memorial, which I heard had a very great turnout.
Yes, it did. It was just a phenomenal turnout. But you know, it's things like that where you realize we gotta get together more often, and not 5-10 years.
Yeah.
We gotta do this shit like you know, at least every 2 years, there's no reason why we're not getting together. And it doesn't need to be a full blown reunion.
No.
Let's just, you know, let's get some people together.
Well, let's shoot that up the flagpole. Let's see if anybody wants to.
Hell yeah.
Run with that. That'd be a fun thing to do next summer.
We got to get Mark Ryan down here. He has no excuse, and I'm not making another goddamn cardboard cutout. Is he allowed
in the country again?
I think he is. I'm pretty sure he's allowed in the, back in the country now. So yeah,
good. Well, Renee, thank you so much for taking the time and talking to us. Like I said, we've been chasing you, and I'm glad we have you on here.
Yeah, such an honor, Bob. Absolute honor.
The honor is ours. It was a pleasure having you on.
Pleasure's all side on this side of the table for sure.
All right. Good talking to you. Take care.
All right, Bob. All right. Take care.
It took a while, but I'm so glad we got Renee on the podcast. Again, as I said, she was an absolute pleasure to talk to. An absolute tower lifer through and through. Again, thank you so much to Renee for being on this week. 2500 Del Monte Street, the oral history of Tower Records, is a production of Busy Buzzy Media. A very special thank you to Mike Slomo Brenner for providing our theme music and all original music for our production. Please subscribe to and review our podcast wherever you listen. Subscribing to a podcast is free, and every Tuesday morning you'll find the new episode ready for a listen. Also, it would really help if you told a friend or two about us. Check out our Instagram and Facebook pages at Tower Records Podcast. We'd love it if you signed up to follow our Facebook page for regular updates. And don't forget our related Facebook page, Induct Tower Records Russ Solomon into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. Join us there in an effort to get Russ Solomon, founder of Tower Records, in the Rock Hall. I'm Bob Zimmerman. Thanks for joining us.